Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. I have just come from a funeral, and I'm a little off base. I spent the morning at a monster turnout, 5,000 people turned out for a slain highway patrolman here in California. I felt I had to attend to show my respect, not only for the officer who was shot to death by a motorist, killed instantly, Officer Kenyon Youngstrom, but for all of those, not only in California, but around America. Not only domestically, in the highway patrols, in the police departments, in the state troopers, but for every person who serves in the U.S. military, I want you to understand that we Americans love you. We respect you. Never mind the yatter coming from the vermin in the media. Most of them are useless garbage. And without you, they wouldn't have the opportunity to be the useless garbage that they are. I went there today, where there were 5,000 police officers and others. Only 2,500 people could get into that church, the Mission Church up in Vacaville, California. It was something to behold, to be frank with you. I never saw anything like it, not in my lifetime. It was in the middle of, it was a big church, a mega church, as it were, in the middle of a field, a huge field, sort of in the middle of nowhere. But in the middle of nowhere, there was a lot going on inside that church. Here's a man who pulls a car over on an ordinary routine traffic stop. I think there was a missing front license plate. He pulls up, and within 15 seconds, the psychotic in the car pulls out a handgun and without any warning shoots the officer once in the neck, and that was the end of it. And then there's more to the story. His partner, who was in a separate car, Officer Tyler Carlton, who you'll hear from in a moment, has the wherewithal, after seeing this nightmare, to immediately rush to the right side of the car and kill the murderer with one shot, I assume. I don't know how many shots were fired, but thank God that he killed the killer instantly. God in heaven, if we had to go through a trial with the ACLU crying over his bad life and he took a drug, and I didn't want to hear it. There's no good news in this. There's only bad news, but there are some really good men. And I was honored to stand among California's best today who, you know, we hear every day, the police this, the police that, their pensions are too high. Well, let me tell you something about their pensions. If it were not for them, there'd be chaos. You'd be living in a greater jungle than you're already living in. And so I say, if you want to cut pensions, cut the pensions of those who don't put their lives on the line every day so the rest of us can have a modicum of peace in ours. Yes, cut the pensions of the deadbeats in the post office. Cut the pensions of those in the departments who don't do very much. But don't cut the pensions of active duty military or anyone who's ever been in combat. Don't cut the pensions of any officer who's ever served on the line or on the streets. That's what I say. And I said it to the governor today, by the way, who was kind enough, frankly, to meet with me. I didn't ask for it. He didn't ask for it. But we ran into each other. We're on the opposite side of the political line. Governor Jerry Brown is a leftist. I'm a rightist, put it that way. But there was no politics there today. There was no right. There was no left. It was all about honoring the fallen officer today. And I invite you to go to my website, michaelsavage.com, and please make a donation to the CHP, the California Highway Patrol Widows and Orphans Fund, and or directly to the officer's family. He left a wife and four young children. And it's something to read it in the paper. You know, you read it, a cop killed. But when you walk into a church and then there's a little chapel in there and the wife sitting there with the kids, it's another story. But this goes on a regular basis for those of you who are in the military. Those of you who are in the military have to face these funerals far more often than you should. And this officer, as I say, was not only a father of four and a husband, but he was also a member of the U.S. Army Reserve. And I was very honored, frankly, to be allowed to stand among California's best today. And I invite you to make a donation. At the funeral, and I won't go on and on about this today, we'll talk about the Japanese news service is reporting that U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens was raped, sodomized before being murdered by the Al-Qaeda friends who he fought so hard for. He thought that if he was nice to them, why, they would just be his friends. Now, there are no confirmed reports on this. It appeared today in a Lebanon news service, a Lebanese news organization, Tayar.org, T-A-Y-Y-A-R, citing AFP news sources. And they claim that the vermin who stormed the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya on Tuesday raped him before murdering him. We don't know if it's true, but ask those listening to this audience to call the show at 1-800-449-8255 if they fought these people, Arabs, in a combat situation. Are there any Israelis listening to the Savage Nation, anyone in the IDF? As you well know, it's kind of verboten amongst all military not to desecrate the corpse of the enemy. But apparently, desecrating the corpse of the enemy is quite common. I can't seem to call our enemy. And so we'll talk about that today on the Savage Nation. Again, if you care to call on this subject, which is it's depressing. I know it. It's really depressing to go to a funeral. It was a big stress for me. My show starts late in the day, 6 o'clock on the east, 3 o'clock on the west. But I asked to attend, and it went up the chain of command, and they invited me to attend. And believe me, they rolled out the red carpet for yours truly, Michael Savage. They sent a young highway patrolman to my house early this morning in a black and white, and we drove up together. Now, we knew there'd be traffic on the highway going up there when we got near it, but we had no idea what we were going to encounter. It was backed up for miles, mainly of cars from Nevada, California, motorcycle cops. You couldn't believe the procession. It was almost impossible to move in it. And I knew I would never get into that funeral home by 10 o'clock in the morning. Because already it was we were sitting there almost 30 minutes. I got there around 9. We were already 9:30. So I asked him to call the individual way up in the command who invited me. And I said, you've got to send someone down by motorcycle to get me, because the only way I'm going to get to that funeral today is on horseback. Because to my right, two people were going by on CHP horses, which was sort of not a joke. I actually wanted to jump on the back of one of the horses to get in there because they were the only ones moving. Nobody was moving. That's how many people were there. Have you ever seen a funeral with 5,000 people? Well, you can't believe this. And the solidarity of this fraternal organization brings to mind so many feelings in me at one time. And I'm sure it brings to mind the same thing in many of you when you see an officer slain or a funeral for such. Most Americans respect their heroes. And while we are told there are no heroes by the vermin in the media, such as Katzenberg, Hatzenberg, Matzenberg, and Ratzenberg, let me tell you something. Maybe there are no heroes where they live. Maybe there are no heroes in Beverly Hills. Maybe there are no heroes in Harvey Weinstein's neighborhood in the Hamptons. But I can tell you there were heroes today in Vacaville, California, and I was honored to stand amongst them. I'll be right back.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm going to talk about the funeral I went to. I just got back from it, really, in Vacaville, California, where 5,000, mainly police officers of the California Highway Patrol, honored the CHP officer who was shot and killed during a normal traffic stop just last week. And I got to say again, the reason I'm doing this show, the reason I took most of my day to go so far away, and I never go to funerals if I can avoid them. To be honest with you, I haven't been at a funeral, well, since my father died in 1970, and I hope that I won't be at one in the near future, particularly my own or any one of my loved ones. But the fact of the matter is, when I read the story of this young man who was killed for no reason whatsoever, I mean, it's bad enough if a guy dies in combat. You expect it in the military in a way. You don't want it to happen, but you expect it. Or in a shootout, you don't want it to happen, but you can understand it. But the human mind can't fathom a young man like this, a man with a young family, four children, pulling a car over, normal traffic stop. And by the way, you know, you want to hear the racial part of it. The officer was white and the shooter was a white guy, just so you can put aside your racial bias. And the guy was clean cut. 15 seconds, pulls out a gun and shoots the officer and kills him, shoots him in the neck. His partner, Tyler Carlton, runs up from the other car, had his gun out, and shot him dead. I mean, shot the killer dead. Do you have any idea what a mindset it would take? You know, I discussed it with somebody today. I want you to think about this. I want you to imagine you're a policeman, and you're in a second car, and you just saw your friend go down from a gunshot in a traffic stop. Do you think the first thing that enters your mind is, how am I going to kill the perpetrator? I'll tell you what enters your mind. What if I fire my gun and the bullet misses and it goes out the other window, which it's going to do, and hits a passing motorist? What if I fire at him and then I'm called up on the carpet for using my gun without authorization? These are the rules as a result of these cockamamie vermin in the ACLU and these so-called police oversight review boards, all of whom should be sent to Iraq and to Libya, as far as I'm concerned. But I have no power, and I have just rage. All I have is the rage within me for what they've done to this country. And I'll say again to you, I'll say it to you again, the next time you read one of these criminals from the ACLU or the Southern Poverty Law Center or any of these other left-wing, fanatic, America, church-hating, cop-hating groups, you better think twice. Because without the cops, you'd be living in a total and absolute jungle. And I'll leave you with one last thought. Imagine you're walking on a dark street at night, and two thugs suddenly move from the other side of the street to you. They're walking towards you. And you have 10 seconds to make a call on your cell phone. Let me ask you something. What would you dial, ACLU or 911? Who would you like to show up? A cockamamie drug-addicted lawyer from the New York Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, or a cop with a gun who has the guts to use one? That's all I can say to you, and I don't want to hear any more from any of you leftists. In fact, I hope you never listen to my show. I only wish to God you'd take a vacation in Libya right now. I have some one-way tickets to Benghazi for you. So I go to this thing, and Officer Tyler Carlton, who had the wherewithal to pull out his gun and kill the perp, kill him, thank God he killed him, so he didn't have to see a trial of the killer and listen to the stories of the ACLU and the other cockamamie losers with fake law degrees. I want you to listen to what CHP Officer Tyler Carlson said today at the church in Vacaville, California. Listen.
My name is Tyler Carlton, and I had the privilege of working with Ken on a daily basis and to be his beat partner the morning of September 4th. And with him on his last enforcement stop. Before I start to talk about Ken, I'd like to read a passage of scripture out of the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, that has brought me comfort throughout this trial. It reads, "There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace any time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace.
Yeah, let's pause right here. Notice this heroic young officer. I'm sure he wouldn't call himself such, but he had the wherewithal to be a hero when he was called upon to be so. Tyler Carlton had the wherewithal to pull his gun and use it in the right way. But notice that he quoted a passage from the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes, a piece I've played very often on my show. Notice he didn't read some New Age rubbish. And thank God that there are still millions of people in the United States of America who are both God-fearing, number one, adhere to their faith of Christianity, and are willing to wear it proudly, despite all of the hatred foisted upon them by the atheists on the left side of the aisle. Thank God that we still have men and women of faith, not only in the police forces and other primary responders, but also in the U.S. military. But as said in the Ecclesiastes, there's a time to talk, basically, and a time to be silent. I truly think I have to be silent for the rest of the day. I don't know that I can go on because my mind is really not focused. In the sense that the casket with the American flag on it and the honor guard and the little kids, you know, it's just a time to think about, you know, the whole deal. The hatred for our police, the hatred for our troops by the left wing, which is a very small minority, which controls the media, controls the movies, controls the television, controls the left wing government of Obama, is enough to make you furious. But remember what Ecclesiastes said. There's a time to love and a time to hate, a time for peace and a time for war. You decide what time it is.
Set.
Look, these are pretty terrible times. Death is in the air. The winds of death are blowing from the Middle East. Okay, let me repeat that. The winds of death are blowing from the radical Muslim world out through the entire planet. They are at war with their neighbors around the planet. Wherever there is a conflict on the planet, it's a Muslim group with a grievance against their neighbor. Make no mistake about it, death is in the air. And when it hits home like this, just simply, I didn't know the officer. And I, you know, how many times have you heard about a cop shot and you say, oh, that's horrible, right? And it doesn't affect you. For some reason, the death of this young man affected me. Probably a number of reasons, which I won't go into. The fact that he was a U.S. Army reservist, the fact that he left a young wife and four children. I mean, those issues touched me. And I realize I'm getting older and, you know, you see these things on the news and it's nothing to you, or you watch it in a movie, you know, a cop funeral with the bagpipes and the flag, and you say, that's pretty nice. But it leads you to ask yourself, what about you? What about your death? I know you're probably going to turn the radio off now because this is one of these taboo subjects, but are funerals still important to you? Have you gone to a particularly moving funeral recently? And I'll ask you a crazier question on the Savage Nation today. Have you planned your funeral? Or have you chosen to become a modern New Ager? No funeral, no burial, just ashes in the wind. Throw them in the garbage, in other words. Throw me into an oven and throw my ashes into the wind. Because that's becoming increasingly common in the atheist world, the atheistic world in which we live, which is that people have no sense of giving a rat about anyone they leave behind. You see, funerals are not for the dead. Prior to my being what I am, I was a professional in the academic world, and one of my fields of study was anthropology, social anthropology. And you have to understand that funerals worldwide in every culture are for the living, not for the dead. And the way people are remembered varies from culture to culture. It's not all European American, although I'm from the European American culture, and it's more or less similar throughout the European American culture. But if you look at funeral services in the Native American culture or the Asian American culture, which varies tremendously, the Hispanic American culture, the African American culture, even the Haitian American culture, they're all different. They've all taken on a different meaning. If anybody was at the, by the way, if anyone was out there today near Leisuretown Road, any of the 5,000 people who paid your respects today at the funeral of Mr. Youngstrom's, at the funeral, you have to see it to believe it. On the windswept outskirts of Vacaville, this mega church, in a desolate, windswept outskirts of Vacaville, it was quite something to see. Have any of you thought about these things? I mean, I know you want to talk about it. I mean, I could talk about the Middle East. I can talk about the fact that there's an unconfirmed report that the ambassador who was just killed was sodomized or raped. As you well know, we're not told these things because we're supposed to believe that they're freedom fighters, that they're rebels, that they're protesters, that they're, if you listen to Anderson Cooper, they're just protesters, just like you and I. But you know what? They're not like you and I. That's what they are. And we have a president right now, although a U.S. ambassador was brutally murdered, possibly raped. An embassy is on fire in Egypt. An embassy is on fire in Yemen. He's fundraising in Las Vegas, Nevada. This is his idea of leadership. Have you any idea how far we have fallen as a nation? Because there was a time that if an ambassador was killed, well, it was rightly seen as an act of war by a group of pirates. And frankly, the pirates were hunted down and killed immediately. There was no time wasted because the people demand an immediate response and they want it. And there could have been an immediate response, make no mistake about it. If we had Patton as a general today, instead of patent leather looking over their shoulder at their 501k or their federal pension, wondering if they're doing the right thing. If we had Patton running the military, I can guarantee you that the next day, if not the next hour, if not the next minute, those training camps, and they know where they are, they have them on satellites, wouldn't be here, they'd be atomized. They'd be 6,000 degrees and cloudy over those training camps. But instead, Obama rushes off to the desert of Nevada to raise money. And so the American people are left crying inside, broken inside, that we have no leadership, no commander-in-chief, no structural command within the military, no hierarchy in the United States of America that has any respect for the country or for the traditions of the country. And so we sit here. We don't know which way to turn. We wait and we pray that November comes and this gang will be thrown out of office. But we don't know. And by the way, Romney did a great job. He did such a great job that the vermin in the media attacked him for daring to criticize King Obama. But let's go back to the topic of the day. You know, I asked myself as I stood there amongst these 5,000 men and women, I said to myself, there are 2,500 people inside this church and 2,500 outside. You should have seen the line. It went for a mile, parked of black and white cars were a mile, parked 1 mile on the outer road. And the motorcycles, the CHP motorcycles, there must have been a half a mile of them lined up with the helmets on them. I said, this is the way it should be. This is the solidarity. This is the band of brothers and sisters in this case. And that's why these people who join these organizations do so. You may be cynical and say, they only do it for the pension. There's much more to it than that. It's a spirit. There's a reason men join the military or join a police force like this or a highway patrol, which is the most elite of the police forces in California. There's a reason because there's a spirit. There's an esprit de corps. There's a brotherhood. There is a fraternal feeling amongst these people that we civilians don't have. And if you analyze your own life and you think about it, when the day comes in your own life, when you have to, you know, when it happens, whatever, we die, I mean, who's going to be there? Who's going to be there for the average listener to the Savage Nation? If you're lucky, you belong to a church and you'll have your community and they will do the right thing and they will take your casket to the grave with, you know, with your widow or in the reverse case, however it may work. But the average person probably today doesn't even have such a community. They are alone. They have a small family, maybe a husband if they're lucky, maybe a wife if they're lucky, maybe a child who might take time out from their busy lives in wherever they are and there come in for the funeral. Maybe there'd be six people there, eight people there. People don't know what to do. They don't know who to hire to give a speech. And then they all look at the casket going into the ground and they don't know what to say. And they go home. And they go home with the pain and the loss if the person was respected and loved. Because we don't cry here in this country. And I learned this a long time ago when I was a young anthropologist. And I believe me, I've studied cultures in many parts of the world from all different angles. Not just from food and medicine, but from the burial rites and whatnot. And one of the things I remember studying that struck me very deeply was that in America, we are all very stoic and we keep our pain to ourselves. And as a result, people become sick and they get unhealthy. They keep it in. The healthier cultures don't keep it in at a funeral. They scream, they yell, they cry. In the Irish culture, they get drunk. I guess that's as good as any. No, it's just a joke. But in America, we have subdued funeral services, dark clothing, right? And it used to be a time of grief. Now it's coming into a more celebration of a person's life. I can't tell you what I truly think is the better way to go. I mean, I think it's up to the family. I have my own particular feelings. I don't see death as a time of celebration. To me, it's a time to curse death. I mean, personally. That's the culture I come from, which is that you curse death to the last second. You tell death to go to hell, and you don't embrace death. You see, in Marin County or San Francisco, the liberals have been brainwashed into thinking that death is something beautiful. Death is something to be embraced and loved. Well, that's not my culture. For my culture, we spit in death's face, and we tell death to drop dead and find somebody else. We don't like death very much, and we try to push her away or him away as long as we can. But that's not what you're going to get amongst the living dead here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so, again, without necessarily going into this, if you want to talk about it, I have to tell you that holding in the being stoic, in other words, around the death of a loved one, often leads to depression because of the internalization of grief. While in some of the traditional cultures that I lived amongst, and studied, the opposite was true. They screamed and they yelled and they made noise, which is considered almost embarrassing today. And I don't think you see much of that at a funeral. And so death services are a very big story. Maybe I should look into this at another time. But I think that we should be thankful for the silent band of blue, of gray, of brown, of gold, whatever the color of the uniform is. Just remember this, without them, you'd be living in a total jungle. You wouldn't be able to go to the grocery store without being assaulted by a predator. They are the wolfhounds, and they keep the wolves at bay. You may not understand this. Many of you live in a dream world. Many of you don't even understand the dangers of your own streets. Some of you do. Some of you are foolish enough to keep your doors unlocked at night. Some of you say we don't need guns. What do you need guns for? That's the right-wing nuts. They need guns. Well, let me remind you that it wasn't for guns. You'd be a slave right now. This was recognized by our founding fathers. It's recognized by most sane Americans. And the only people who don't want you to own guns are those who would like to own you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. The winds of death are blowing from the Middle East thanks to the incompetent academic blowhards in the White House. And as you well know, the embassy is burning in Egypt. The embassy is burning in Yemen. The ambassador to Libya was killed, but the report that came out today from an organization in Lebanon, a news organization called Tayar.org, says that the ambassador was raped by the men before being murdered. Let me repeat that. He was sodomized by the very people he tried to help before being murdered. It's an unconfirmed report, but it did come from a reputable organization, a Lebanese news organization, Tayar.org, citing AFP news sources. There's no other AFP story or anything on AFP's website that mentions this at all. Again, I repeat, it is unconfirmed. But it's shocking to me that with a report like this, the Fugazi in the White House is fundraising in the desert. Let's go to the callers. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Matthew in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, please report on the funeral. This guy's going to get 11 and a half seconds on the news tonight, and that's it. Please give us 2 more hours.
Well, I've given America, not just California, an hour of it because it touched me very deeply. That's why I went up there today, and I want to thank the Commissioner Joe Farrow for permitting me to attend, and to stand around all of these guys, you know, was something, truthfully, because I'm just a civilian, just a member of the media as it comes down to it, and it was something to behold, and brings to mind all the questions I've raised today. Are funerals still important in a general sense? Or have you eschewed your own funeral and you just want to be cremated and have your ashes scattered so you like you never existed? Are you simply into that or what? What do you think? Are funerals still important or not? Also, if you were at the funeral today in Vacaville on that windswept road where I was, and if you want to call the show at 1-800-449-8255 anonymously, it's 1-800-449-8255, and give us a quick report, you can do so. Also, if you have fought Al-Qaeda in the military or you have fought any of the other cutthroat throwbacks in Afghanistan or anywhere in the Middle East, whether you be a member of the U.S. Armed Forces or a member of the Israeli Defense Forces, and you know how these animals behave and how they treat the enemy after they're captured or killed, I'd like you to call because maybe we can wake America up to the fact that they are asleep, being put asleep by the vermin in the media, and we're all going to be turned into slaves unless we stand up and demand more from our leaders and demand better leaders. That's all I can say. Because right now we have zero leadership. Nothing. Zero. We have nothing but fundraisers and con men, shills for interests we don't even know. And we in America are sitting here saying, wait a minute, they're burning our embassies. These are the people that Obama helped get into power. They're burning our embassies. They killed and possibly sodomized our ambassador, and he's fundraising in Nevada. You know, I mean, how much more has to happen till you wake up? What actually has to happen? You have to be hit over the head by somebody screaming Allah Akbar? You forgot already the Fort Hood massacre. The Fort Hood massacre was swept under the rug by your media, your lovely liberal media. 33 members of the armed forces were gunned down in cold blood by Muslim Major Nidal Hassan, who had indicated his madness and his fanaticism for years, signing every medical report in the U.S. Army now. He was a psychiatrist, so-called. Every medical report was concluded with Allah Akbar, every one. Now, could you imagine if a Christian, an observant Christian doctor signed his medical reports in the military with praise Jesus? Can you imagine what the lowlifes in the hierarchy of these organizations would have done to that Christian doctor? But they looked the other way when it came to the Muslim major. He was a ticking time bomb. Nidal Hassan killed 13, I believe, and wounded 33 unarmed troops in a dining hall. By the way, they were unarmed. Because according to military code, they're not allowed to have bullets in their guns. That was put in power, incidentally, I believe, under Jimmy Carter, who stripped our servicemen of the right to bear arms inside the military. Possibly, I shouldn't finish this sentence because he feared them turning on him, but I just finished the sentence anyway. You heard me. But the point is Nidal Hassan, the perpetrator of the Fort Hood massacre, the worst massacre in U.S. military history against our own troops by a member of the military, has still not been brought to trial several years later because Obama doesn't want you to remember who we are fighting, why we are fighting them, and the depth of their evil. The depth of their evil. Jim in Ohio, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, it's kind of ironic. We lost a wonderful Catholic priest this last Monday. He He was 77 years old. He had a parish in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and another one in Guilford, New Hampshire. We love him so much. We're driving to New Hampshire this weekend for services this Tuesday. The man,
so you think, but I mean, hold it, Jim. The question was, are funerals still important?
Oh, absolutely. That's why we're going all the way, 770 miles to New Hampshire from Toledo.
I see what you're saying. You're saying funerals or remembrance are important for the living, as we're talking about today, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, thank you. So you're not into being turned into ashes and thrown into the bay in a jar. That's very popular here in the San Francisco area amongst the atheists, which is incinerate me and then take me out on a boat and throw the ashes out at sea. I don't know. Hey, different. I don't know what to say. You can't joke about it. But I knew a guy who took a jar of ashes out for someone on the back of his boat. And the wind came down from the back of his boat and blew the ashes into his face and everyone else in the party while they were drinking their garbage Chardonnay. I don't know whether that was God saying to them, you know, the dead deserve more than this. But anyway, that happened. Yeah, that happened. Alabama Keith is an Afghan vet. Maybe you can learn something from him. Keith, thanks for telling us. So what about the enemies? Tell us what they do to American corpses if they can.
Dark Savages, they're ruthless. They're just plain evil people. They don't care about Geneva Conventions or rules of engagement. We're the only ones that follow that. They don't.
That's right. But you see, our troops who were seen urinating on dead bodies, I think that they were court-martialed, possibly imprisoned, by our great leader, Leon Panetta. And I think someone else who accidentally sneezed on a ripped page out of a Quran was sent to prison. So you see, we have a really wonderful hierarchy in the U.S. military, don't we? They really put our troops first. Why are they so sensitive to Al-Qaeda? Why are they so sensitive to the Taliban? Because after all, look how nicely they treated us in
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. The Middle East is on fire, and the winds of death are blowing around the globe from the throwbacks who live in another century and in another universe. And we are being lulled to sleep by a lack of leadership. There's a vacuum at the top. There is no presidency that I can tell. A president is a leader, a commander-in-chief, both commands and leads. And while this is going on, a news report comes out of Lebanon that not only was our ambassador, Christopher Stevens, killed by the Al-Qaeda members who he seemed to love so much that he actually helped overthrow Gaddafi to put them in power. Not only did they then kill him, but according to, and it's an unconfirmed report, the Lebanese news organization Tayar.org, T-A-Y-Y-A-R, said that the ambassador was reportedly sodomized, raped before being murdered by the very people that he apparently tried to help. The fact of the matter is we are facing Armageddon in this nation, an Armageddon of the spirit, an Armageddon of the soul, an Armageddon of the very essence of the United States of America, precisely because we have nothing but Fugazis running the country. A Fugazi is a false diamond, a fake, in other words. That's what we have right now. We have the hollow man that was described by the poet T.S. Eliot. An empty suit is how it was called in other times. That's exactly what we have in the White House. Call it anything you want. You know and I know there's no leadership. Because had we had a leader right now, after our embassies were burned, and they're burning now in Egypt, They're burning in Yemen. Our ambassador was murdered. Our alleged leader is in the sands of Nevada raising money. And so we are told by our dear leader that we are not at war. We're told by our dear leader that, again, this is an offshoot group. We're told by our dear leader that they love us over there. And instead of cutting off money to Egypt, Pelosi says, I still support USA to Egypt. Instead of saying we're not going to give another dime to Egypt or to Libya, Obama says we're going to give them more money because we want them to love us even more. There's no end to the insanity. Protesters, as I say, storming the American embassy in Yemen. U.S. flags burning in Tunisia. New clashes in Cairo. The consulate in Berlin is evacuated. One place after another on fire and being assaulted by the practitioners of the religion of peace. And we have no leadership. At the same time, the only friends we have in the Middle East, in Israel, were told to drop dead by Obama. Netanyahu wanted to meet with him at the end of the month when he's in New York. And Obama said he doesn't have the time. He's going on a television show that night. That's the leader that we have now. And so we, the people, are left basically in the lurch. And when a young officer dies, as happened to, a few weeks ago, I went to the funeral today. I've been talking about it for an hour. and you're around 5,000 members of the Highway Patrol, friends and family of the fallen. It touches you in a way, if you're not even a member of the military or of the police. As a civilian, it touches you in a way that you normally not touch because we're removed from all of it. We live in a bubble. We live in a dream world. And as I've said to you before, the armed police, the armed military, who you see on the streets, they are the wolfhounds, and they keep the wolves at bay. Because we still live in a jungle. You may not know it. Many of you live in a dreamland thinking it's safe to leave your doors unlocked at night because it can't happen here, it won't happen to you, we're protected. But you are not living in the real world. Were it not for the wolfhounds, the wolves would rip you to pieces. So all I can say is this entire show is dedicated to all the wolfhounds living and dead. And the wolfhounds in particular who are living and listening to the show, I want to thank you again. So we can talk about these topics today. If you were at the funeral today in Vacaville on that windswept road, and you'd like to comment, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Hillary, our great Secretary of State, who brought this about by instigating the so-called Arab Spring, which only one man in the media saw it for what it was, Michael Savage. I wrote about it in Trickle Down Tyranny a year ago. It was published only a few months ago, but I wrote it a year ago because I'm not fooled. You know, you can fool some of the people some of the time. You can fool some of the people all of the time. But frankly, you can't fool Savage any of the time. I saw it for what it was, the Arab winter. How is it that one man without any connections in government, sitting in his own house, watching the world go by like in the old Beatles song, how come I knew it was the Arab winter? How come I knew when they overthrew Mubarak that these murderous throwbacks would take control in Egypt and become they become our worst enemy? And right now, they're our worst enemy. And Obama says they're not our enemy and they're not our friend, but we're going to continue to send them $1 billion. Instead of cutting off money to Libya and bombing their training camps, and believe me, they know where they are. They know where the training camps are of these people. They know just where they are. We have satellites that can see a flea on a dog's behind. They know where they are. Instead of launching missiles from far away with the most advanced technology in the world, we sit here like patsies, our friends in the Middle East. And that's what one man's opinion is. That's what one man's opinion is. And by the way, don't go for the malarkey. I dispelled the notion yesterday, the lie that it was that anti-Muslim movie from the crackpot filmmaker. Now, let me tell you why I say it wasn't that that triggered this. I'll explain why I'm saying it. It's not even a guess, because it was said by a former Libyan terrorist who gave up his evil ways. And he now has an anonymous name. And he said, don't be fooled by that. He said, it's a lie. He said, these attacks on 9/11 were orchestrated by the number two command in Al-Qaeda, Al-Zawahiri, as revenge for the killing of one of his deputies. And he said, they're going to use the movie as an excuse. But who fed you the lie that it was the movie that did it? Why, it was the very same vermin who poisoned America's mind with their filth and violence. The very same drug addicts in the media who don't know whether they're taking Xanax, Valium, an upper or a downer, as occurred last week with one of the great newsmen, Tom Brokaw, who apparently took the wrong medication one morning and collapsed. The very same drug addicts are the ones who told you that it was the movie, the internet movie that nobody saw, that triggered these riots. But the people who really know say it's not. This was carefully planned and carefully organized. And so we come back again to our own country and Egypt. Is Egypt our ally? Well, the White House doesn't know. The White House doesn't know whether Egypt is our ally, the Muslim Brotherhood, or they're not our ally. Because President Barack Obama said last night, he said Egypt is not an ally. But apparently, he said the U.S. relationship with the new Egyptian government, so-called, was a work in progress. Isn't that very academic of him? Isn't that so accepting and so liberal to call terrorists and their new government in Egypt a work in progress? Isn't that so Dr. Spockish to say that if you treat a person with respect, they'll come around to your way of thinking? I think that's just so wonderful that we have a president who's willing to take a chance on terrorists, because they haven't told us yet who they are. We have no way to know who the Muslim Brotherhood is. They have no history. They only go back hundreds of years. We have no way to know what they want to do. We may, but not the president. He didn't learn that at Harvard. Let's hear the clip, clip 7.
I don't think that we would consider them an ally, but we don't consider them an enemy. They are a new government that is trying to find its way. They were democratically elected. I think that we are going to have to see how they respond to this incident. I think it's still a work in progress, but certainly in this situation, what we're going to expect is that they are responsive to our insistence that our embassy is protected, our personnel is protected.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, they'll be responsive. They'll be very responsive. I love the line that they were democratically elected. Let me remind you something, Mr. President, that you probably didn't learn at Harvard. Hitler was democratically elected. I don't think you learned that at Harvard. I don't know if it was in the curriculum, but Hitler was democratically elected. And look where that led. How'd that work out for Germany? What does democratically elected mean? That more fanatics than non-fanatics put him in power? Those who hate Christians and those who hate the freedom of women? They weren't allowed to win, but those who hate women and those who hate freedom and those who hate Christians did take over Egypt after being suppressed by the evil Mubarak? And you think they're going to be your friend? Excuse me, I didn't go to Harvard. I went to Berkeley, but I did learn how to read. I don't know if you even learned how to read over there at Harvard. I don't know what you were reading if you don't know who they are by now. But you'll find out soon enough. You'll find out soon enough, Mr. President. See, we the people may not be as smart as your advisors, your czars, but once in a while you may want to listen to some of the smarter people in the peanut gallery, because sometimes some of them know something. See, we're actually the people who built it. We're the actual people who do the plumbing, do the electric, do the carpentry. We're the people who do the things. We're the ones who built the things. We're the ones who actually write the books, and the government didn't do any of that, Mr. President. And, of course, we didn't read the same books you read. Maybe we read the truth rather than the books that you read, Mr. President. But the truth is hitting us pretty hard in the face right now, Mr. President. You see, just the other day, an ambassador was killed, and you went off to a fundraiser in Nevada. You feel the people are that dumb that they aren't going to remember it, because you go on the television shows like Letterman and the other yuckers out there who read the scripts written for them by far more intelligent writers. You think that we the people don't know what's going on? Well, let's hope in November you're wrong. Let's just hope in November that more people do know what's going on that don't know what's going on. And let's pray Americans can be saved, let us say, in the nick of time. Because that's what it comes down to. Because if we get this Fugazi in power again, if this Fugazi wins again, you can kiss America goodbye. And I'm not the only one saying it. I can tell you, I know people who've built vast businesses in this country. I have a few friends. Everyone who's actually produced something in this country, everyone who's actually created a business in this country, is scared out of their minds. Everybody who's ever made anything, produced anything, or provides a real service is terrified of the White House, terrified of the incompetence and the evil emanating from Pennsylvania Avenue. And they're all saying to me, literally, one after the other, and I run into them, or I get emails from them. The real creators of this country and the country's economy are saying to me they're thinking of leaving the country if this Fugazi wins again. They want to get out of this country. I've heard people tell me they're going to move to Canada, they're going to move to Iceland. You can't believe the things people are saying because of this fraud in the White House. This jokester, this hypocrite, they can't understand how he ever got elected to begin with. Well, the word begins with S and it ends with S. And it was all written in my great book, Trickle Down Tyranny. It's the one book I believe you need to read before the election to save this country. And if you read it already, then give it to a liberal friend before it's too late. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This show today is dedicated to all of those of you who serve this nation, both in the U.S. military and in the police forces around America. That's what it comes down to. As I said to you, if you just joined the show, I went to the funeral today of CHP officer Kenyon Youngstrom at a church up in Vacaville, and it was very moving to see 5,000 people there. The show of solidarity is astounding. And it's a different America than the one portrayed by Harvey Weinstein. That's all I can say to you. John in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I wanted to say, as an officer, I want to give you thanks for spending the time on this story about Officer Youngstrom. It's very important. I don't think the most of the media is spending very much time on it at all. They're probably taking note of it today, but that'd be the end of it.
No, they didn't. I mean, there was a camera there from one of the news outlets, but, you know, it's just sort of lip service. Were you actually at the service at the church today, John?
Yes, sir, I was. I was there. It's very important.
Yeah, and really, I mean, I'm telling the audience how moved I was by it. I'm sure everybody there felt the same way. Isn't that true?
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't a dry eye in the place. Something like that. It's
no.
Very powerful.
No. Well, that's enough said, John. I know it's not easy to talk about, and I thank you very much for noting that I am trying my best to alert people to the sacrifice that the men in blue, if you want to call it that, make it simple, men in blue, the thin blue line, make it simple, perform for us. And if you want to donate money to the Widows and Orphans Fund, you can do so by going to michaelsavage.com and linking on the bottom right. I wish you would. Send them $10, that's all. $5, not $10, okay? Whatever. I want to say one other thing about Libya before we move on to some callers. Now, who was overthrown by Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? Why, the evil man Gaddafi, right? When this uprising began in Benghazi, where the attack on the embassy occurred a year ago, do you know what Gaddafi said? Gaddafi at that time said that the revolt that supported by Obama was the work of terrorists, long native to eastern Libya, and Gaddafi warned the world that if they were not crushed, Libya would become the Somalia of the Mediterranean, a string of radical Islamic emirates just across the water from southern Europe. And guess what? How in the world did this happen? And how in the world can an administration be so out of touch with reality that after the embassy is burned to the ground and the ambassador is killed and or sodomized, they still say, give it a chance, that they're our kind of people, they're our friends. I've never seen anything like this. Either they're all insane, naive academicians, or they're all on drugs. There's no other explanation for this. Did you remember what Hillary Clinton did when they killed Gaddafi? Do you still have that tape, in case you all missed it? Here is the great genius Hillary Clinton, the great woman of peace, the compassionate Hillary Clinton. Okay, keep looking for it and tell me when we have it. After Gaddafi was found and brutally murdered, apparently he was sodomized as well, incidentally, because that's how it's done over there. That's how they treat the enemy in that part of the world, the tribesmen who are now our friends or the friends of the administration. It was shocking to hear Hillary Clinton celebrating his death. Play it now, Beowulf. Go ahead, please.
We came, we saw, he died.
You hear the gals? That's the compassionate administration that we have today. The triumvirate of the Valkyries. The triumvirate of the Valkyries. Hillary Clinton, Samantha Power, and Susan Rice. The women with real guts. Guts and glory.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. As I say, the winds of death are blowing out of the Middle East. You've got tribesmen who live in another century who have become our partners, at least the partners of our government, who were warned, even by Gaddafi, who they were. But they giggled at the death of Gaddafi. They thought it was just wonderful. You see, they thought democracy was the answer. Now the embassy's on fire. The ambassador's dead. His corpse desecrated. And Obama's so satisfied with his work that he feels it's time to take a break and go fundraising in Las Vegas. In fact, that's where he is. He's not managing the fires that are burning in the Middle East. He's managing to raise money. Let's listen to him if you think I'm making this up. Here is your commander-in-chief today. At least I thought he was our commander-in-chief today.
I want to begin tonight by just saying a few words about a tough day that we've had today. You know, we lost four Americans last night who were killed when they were attacked at a diplomatic post in Libya.
Attacked by who? Who, by ghosts? Who attacked them? I mean, no enemy? They were attacked by who? By gastritis? They were attacked by a virus? They were attacked by a bacterium? Who attacked them? There's no name. You see, to our government, there is no enemy. But the enemy knows who their enemy is. That's one thing about them. They know who their enemy is. And as I say, you know, this report, which is unconfirmed about the sodomization or the sodomy, the rape of our ambassador by the very people he tried to befriend. Talk about naivete. Unbelievable. I never saw anything like this. I don't understand who's running the world. I don't understand if it's naivete. I don't have words for it. They don't know who they are. They think they can befriend Frankenstein. Well, anyway, it's an unconfirmed report coming out of Lebanon. And the organization is Tayyar.org, citing AFP sources, that the ambassador was reportedly raped by the so-called gunman before being murdered. That was his reward for being kind to them. And it does fit the pattern of the tribesmen who fought in the Middle East in the U.S. Armed Forces to tell us whether or not the enemy desecrates corpses, because I know it's true. I've read it over the years. That's what they do to the enemy. They desecrate the corpses. Yes or no? Something you won't read in the normal paper, because normal papers have become nothing but propaganda sheets for the Democrat regime. Dallas, Texas, Stephen, go ahead, please.
Absolutely they do, Dr. Savage. I served in Iraq with the U.S. Marines in 2005-2006 alongside some of the very men that you helped to provide defense funds for in connection to the Haditha incident. So thank you for that, first of all. But one particular incident came to mind that stuck with me as we brought a guy into custody that was pointed out to us as someone who had gotten a hold of a fellow Marine. They took him alive, and this guy crucified him.
And that didn't make it to the army headquarters. They didn't know about it. They were busy. They were busy hobnobbing at a cocktail party. What did they do when they heard about this?
Well, from what I know, that we transferred him up to a higher security detainee facility. And
you mean the perpetrator of the crucifixion? The perpetrator of the crucifixion was given a fair trial. I'm sorry, he was sent. He was where is he today? Back in the terrorist camp after being released from Gitmo? Or does anyone know where he is?
Well, I can only hope that he's still in the terrorist camp, but I honestly don't know what happened to him after their
removal. Under Leon Panetta, he may have been rehabilitated and sent back to his homeland because you don't want to separate him from his tribe. I mean, that would be racist to separate a terrorist from his tribe, don't you think? It would be racist, and it would be unfeeling, and it would be, it would just be too American to separate a man like that from his tribe. I mean, that's what they do. They crucify Christians. They rape soldiers that they capture. You're not seeing it from their point of view. You see, the problem with Americans today is that we're too chauvinistic. We don't see the world through the eyes of 15th century men, proud men. They're very proud. I mean, just ask Hillary Clinton about their culture. She's in love with them. Soros is in love with them. Brzezinski's in love with them. Jimmy Carter's in love with them. Obama's in love with them. He seems to spend more time courting them than courting the American patriot. Why, just last week we learned that Eric Holder, our attorney general, was fighting to make certain that U.S. military personnel who are overseas don't vote. I mean, the important thing is to make sure that they don't vote. Oh, you can say they serve us at a ceremony or something, but you certainly don't want all of those right-wing guys with guns to go in and vote because you know which way they're going to vote. You can pretty be sure after they face the tribesmen which way they're going to vote. They're not going to vote for our commander-in-chief. I think they're going to vote for a replacement. And so if you're Eric Holder, what you do is you make certain that they don't vote. Isn't that the American way? Now, the important thing is, remember what Obama said about Libya, is that the leaders there, the tribesmen who were running the country, who just burnt their embassy to the ground and killed our ambassador, they were democratically elected. Emphasis on the word elected. See, we want to make sure that every Iraqi can vote, every Afghani can vote, every Libyan can vote, but we want to make sure that not every American can vote. In fact, we want to make certain that only some Americans vote under Obama. The illegal alien should vote twice and often. The people in Florida should be able to vote in New York and Florida and anywhere else. Vote early and vote often. If you live in Boca Raton and you live in Queens or Brooklyn, why, be sure to vote in two or three different locations for Obama, because that's the kind of vote that the administration wants. But these right-wing crackpots who are willing to put down their life for America, they shouldn't be allowed to vote. They're just cannon fodder to this administration. Guys who just don't know really what's going on. It's you people in Boca Raton who really know what's going on. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Pardon me for my sarcasm. It's the way I was born. I was born with a sarcasm spoon in my mouth. Ken in Tennessee, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I wanted to call and thank you for attending the officer's funeral today. That was a very kind thing. I'm certain that you did a lot to help his family, those who were his friends, and I'm sure you did something for the spirit of the other officers in attendance. And I'd also like to extend to you a personal thanks for being a standard bearer for decency. That seems to be something in of a rarity these days, and you do it. You do it with grace, and you do it with strength. And I do thank you.
Well, Ken, all I can say is, from one man to another, thank you. You know, your thanks mean a lot to me. Well, I was honored that they let me stand amongst them. You know, it's like a guy who's not in the military going to a military funeral when you see all of the, you know, everyone was armed in that room. I know it probably would have shocked Hillary Clinton, but do you know that every CHP officer had a loaded pistol in his or her, on his or her hip? It was shocking. I mean, to think that there were officers with guns and they were all loaded. I mean, it was just shocking. You can't have a thing like that. I mean, if Southern Poverty Law Center could possibly report that the CHP is a terrorist or a hate organization. No, think about it. I mean, it does meet the criterion of being a hate organization. In fact, every state trooper organization in America, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, would qualify as being a hate group. Think about it. They believe in God. No doubt they're probably super Christian. They have guns. And they know how to use them. According to those in the Southern Poverty Law Center, every police force in America is a hate group. No, think about that. Now, Al-Qaeda is a love group. To the ACLU and the Southern Poverty Law Center, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, they're love groups because they're third worlders. And you have to have compassion for people in the third world. You have to understand they see the world differently, and they're only fighting for their honor. I mean, we're the invader. We shouldn't be in their country. I mean, who are we to tell them, right, to say that to any of them? After all, we are a country of compassion. And so we should be compassionate for their fourth century view of the world. We don't want to drag them into the modern world. That would be against their culture. And so, although they're not our enemy, they're not our friend, but they're not really our enemy. Ask Obama. He doesn't know what Egypt is. Did you hear him today? Did you hear Obama's speech on Egypt after the embassy's on fire? Listen to this again. You guys have it?
I don't think that we would consider them an ally, but we don't consider them an enemy. They are a new government that is trying to find its way.
They were democratic. They're not an ally, and they're not an enemy. So this kind of confuses even those in the Middle East. Because, I mean, there used to be a phrase, the enemy of our enemy is our friend, or the friend of our enemy is our enema. I don't know what it was, something like that. But Obama is such a parser of reality that we don't know whether they're our enemy or our friend, because he doesn't really know. All he knows is that he's sending $1 billion to our enemy or our ally. We don't know what they are, but they're getting another $1 billion so they can buy submarines to attack Israel. Now, anti-American protests are burning out of control because the Arab winter that I warned you about in my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, I warned you what was coming, is burning out of control. The fires are raging. And instead of the commander-in-chief being at the helm, he's out there raising money. President Jimmy Peanut Carter today gave a speech, and he was asked if he agrees with what Obama said about Egypt. And Carter, the lover of anything radical, Carter, who has never met a Muslim terrorist that he didn't love, said the following. Carter said, Egypt is an ally of the U.S. We know Egypt well. Really? How? What do you mean we know them well? We knew Mubarak well. They were our ally for 43 years. But the reason Carter hated Mubarak is because Mubarak made friends with Israel. And as you well know, Jimmy Carter has a genetic hatred for Jews, by my estimation. Jimmy Carter has an almost DNA hatred for Israel. It's in his DNA. I mean, all those years waving snakes around and drinking lighter fluid or whatever they drink down there in his church made him understand that his friend is the terrorist and his enemy is the Jew. And so maybe Carter's telling the truth. I'm sure he is. He's a truthful man. Since he's truthful about his hatred for Israel, he's truthful about his love for Egypt. So he said that he knows the new president of Egypt, Carter said, and he's a radical Muslim. And he said he knows him well, and he's met with him. And he said Egypt's Muslim president of the Muslim Brotherhood is dedicated to peace and truly a democratic government. And as you know, coming from Jimmy Carter, you can take that to the bank. The problem is there is no bank to take it to, but you can take it to the bank. So Jimmy Carter corrected Obama today and said, the president's wrong. Egypt is an ally of the U.S., and that's that. That's all you have to know. And as you all know, Jimmy Carter knows everything. Okay. You can Babel just sent me an email saying you can take that to the bank. And I said, which bank? He said, the West Bank. Oh, that's terrible. That is so awful. Sacramento, KSTE, David, you know, this is a funny, I'm going to tell you a funny story. Okay. You know, it's kind of almost 2 hours and it's been a rough day for me. I'm not used to getting up so early and driving in traffic. And thanks to the CHP officer, Ross, for taking me and all of those great guys at the top for making the Red Sea part for me when we got there stuck in traffic, miles of cars and motorcycles to pay their respects to Officer Kenyon Youngstrom. I mean, had I not called and said, I'm not getting there unless you send me a motorcycle, because I was ready to jump on a horse going by. The CHP had two horseback riders. It was something out of a movie. I mean, it was sitting on in the middle of that plane, and it was like, how am I going to get there? I said, maybe you could put me on the horse. So they sent the motorcycle cop, and we rode in the opposite lane, you know, slowly right down there. Then when we got near the chapel, the church, it's like the Red Sea parted right in there. Right in there. So I said, you know, I knew the governor would be there, and I know the governor's on the other side of the aisle, very far on the other side of the aisle. In fact, way on the other side of the aisle. In fact, he's so far on the other side of the aisle, we never see each other. I haven't seen him in years, Governor Jerry Brown. And he heard I was there. I said, well, tell the governor I send my regards. I mean, the fact of the matter is I wanted him to hear that I was there, and I was the only member of the media that was there, incidentally. There were a few cameramen, but I didn't see anyone else from the media up there at the funeral. Well, about 10 minutes later, as I was seated waiting for the services to begin, officer came out and said, the governor would like to see you. So he led me through the you know, the auditorium. And Governor Brown came up to me, and he said, hey, I'm going to tell you a funny story. He says to me, so how are you doing? He said, are you still on the radio? So I said to him, oh, yes. He said, well, which station are you on? I said, well, Governor, I'm on a station right here in Sacramento, KSTE. He said, well, I haven't heard you in a couple of years. I said, thank God. I thought that was funny. I don't know if Governor Brown understood the joke, but okay, I'm a man of mirth. And so therefore, mirth sometimes works. Sometimes You know, the first thing he said to me was, he says, we're making progress. I've been able to make some dents in the pensions. He said that to me right off the bat. I mean, he wanted to, you know, basically reach across the aisle. He knows I'm a conservative right-wing redneck from the Bronx. He understands that. You know, people could have rednecks even in Brooklyn. It doesn't matter where you're from. Your neck can turn red if you actually boat in the sun, hunt in the sun, golf in the sun, walk in the sun, play tennis in the sun, or run away from criminals in the sun. Your neck turns red. He has just came out on the Drudge Report. You don't want to hear this. Top story. U.S. warned of embassy attack but did nothing. Oh, my God. I would say I don't believe it, but under Obama, I do believe it. Revealed inside story of U.S. envoy's assassination. Exclusive. America was warned of embassy attack, but did nothing. This just came out of a newspaper in England, The Independent. And there's much more to this story. And the U.S. is facing a crisis in Libya. Sensitive documents have gone missing from the consulate in Benghazi. The supposedly secret location of the safe house in the city where the staffer retreated came under sustained mortar attack. So it was given up by our so-called friends who are now friends of Carter and Obama. And some of the missing papers from the consulate are said to list names of Libyans who are working with Americans, putting them potentially at risk from extremist groups. I'll be right back. Savage.
We came in through the embassy gates and broke the door, and we raised the flag of the Messenger of Allah. And if they repeat this, we will enter again until there are no ambassadors left in the Arab world.
You're not listening to a rally at University of California at Berkeley. You're listening to the friends of Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, George Soros, Zbigniew Brzezinski. Last year's uprising in Libya began in Benghazi, the very site of the massacre of our ambassador and some Marines. Gaddafi, the evil Gaddafi, that Hillary Clinton celebrated his death, remember? She cheered when he died, laughed with the gals. Gaddafi himself, while he was alive, said that we should not support the revolt. He said we need to crush the revolt. He said the revolt was the work of terrorists long native to eastern Libya, and warned, this is Gaddafi a year ago, that if the U.S. didn't help crush it, the country called Libya would become the Somalia of the Mediterranean, a string of radical Islamic emirates just across the water from southern Europe. And that's exactly what's going on right in front of your eyes. It is the greatest foreign policy disaster in modern American history. It was orchestrated by Barack Obama under the guise of spreading democracy. Instead, you see the results. Now they're attacking Romney for having dared say one timid little word about King Obama. One word. We live in a democracy, and a man says one word from the opposition party, and the rats in the media jump all over him. Well, Romney should remember that the American people want a leader who will criticize a non-leader. And they want someone to stand up at a time like this for America, and for our troops, and for our embassies, and for our ambassador. So go, Romney, go. That's all I can say right now. But let's get down to brass tacks. This is what's happening as you witness the burning of the cities in the Arab Crescent. I told you about it in Trickle Down Tyranny. I have over a chapter. And I wrote it a year ago. It was published 3 months ago. I'm not a prophet. I'm just an analyst. And I'm trying to tell you that we have no leadership in the White House right now. Why is he fundraising? Why is this man fundraising while the Middle East is burning? That's the only question you should be asking yourself today.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here is some of the audio we collected for you today on The Savage Nation. The highway patrolman partner of the officer who was shot dead spoke at the funeral. The dead officer's name is Kenyon Youngstrom.
My name is Tyler Carlton, and I had the privilege of working with Ken on a daily basis and to be his beat partner the morning of September 4th and with him on his last enforcement stop. Before I start to talk about Ken, I'd like to read a passage of scripture out of the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, that has brought me comfort throughout this trial. It reads, "There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace." One of the things you could always count on with my friend Ken was that no matter how hard of a day we would have out on the road, you could always count on him. He'd come back to the office with a smile on his face and an encouraging word to lift the rest of us up. I often have thoughts that creep into my mind of why, or what if, or I could have. But then I keep reminding myself that everything does happen for a reason. That this was all in God's plans, and that his plans are perfect every time. What brings me peace now is knowing that Ken is resting easy up in heaven beside the Lord Jesus Christ and smiling down upon us.
Now listen to the sounds of the riots in Yemen.
"We came in through the embassy gates and broke the door, and we raised the flag of the Messenger of Allah. And if they repeat this, we will enter again until there are no ambassadors left in the Arab world."
Here's Obama attacking Romney.
"There's a broader lesson to be learned here. And, Governor Romney seems to have a tendency to shoot first, name later. And as president, one of the things I've learned is you can't do that. It's important for you to make sure that the statements that you make are backed up by the facts and that you've thought through the ramifications before you make them."
Do you think it was irresponsible?
I'll let the American people judge that.
Richard Engel from NBC questions if it was worth it to support the Arab Spring. A real genius.
"I almost had to sit down when I heard that. For the last 40 years, the United States has had two main allies, Arab allies, in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia and Egypt. The other ally in the Middle East being Israel. So for the president to come out and say, well, he's not exactly sure if Egypt is an ally anymore, but it's not an enemy, that is a significant change in the perspective of Washington toward this country, the biggest country in the Arab world. It makes one wonder, well, was it worth it? Was it worth supporting the Arab Spring, supporting the demonstrations here in Tahrir Square, when now in Tahrir Square there are clashes going on behind me right in front of the U.S. Embassy? Before, when the United States, President Obama, was supporting the demonstrators here, President Mubarak was in power, and Egypt was very much an ally. Now, The president doesn't seem to be sure if Egypt is an ally anymore. And some demonstrators who the Arab Spring helped give a voice to are trying to attack the U.S. embassy.
Even Dianne Feinstein is starting to mutter that this may have been terrorism. Duh.
It isn't clear. And nobody quite knows, you know. Zawahiri has done a message urging revenge for the death of an al-Qaeda leader. And I think that was too soon to this event to have caused the event. But it may well be that
so,
now
so you think
people,
it could be al-Qaeda?
I think it could be. I can't say it was, but it certainly could be. Their weapons were somewhat sophisticated. They blew a hole in the building. They started a big fire, and that's how the ambassador died in the fire.
Hillary is still yattering about religious tolerance.
We are home to people of all religions, many of whom came to this country seeking the right to exercise their own religion, including, of course, millions of Muslims. And we have the greatest respect for people of faith. This video is disgusting and reprehensible. It appears to have a deeply cynical purpose to denigrate a great religion and to provoke rage. Our country does have a long tradition of free expression, which is enshrined in our Constitution and our law. And we do not stop individual citizens from expressing their views, no matter how distasteful they may be. There are, of course, different views around the world about the outer limits of free speech and free expression. But there should be no debate about the simple proposition that violence in response to speech is not acceptable.
Obama's in Las Vegas campaigning.
I want to begin tonight by just saying a few words about a tough day that we've had today. You know, we lost four Americans last night who were killed when they were attacked at a diplomatic post in Libya. And they were serving overseas on our behalf. Despite the dangers, despite the risks, to help one of the world's youngest democracies get on its feet. They were working to advance the interests and the values that we hold dear as Americans. As for the ones we lost last night, I want to assure you, we will bring their killers to justice.
But at least the president is still telling jokes.
Now, because Nevada is a battleground state, you are aware that we've got an election going on. Unless you've accidentally stumbled in here looking for a convention of podiatrists, then you've been paying some attention to the election.
This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
It is well known for at least 20 years, if not more, that the Democrats are known as the minority party. I mean, let's clear the air. Democrats, minority party. That's a given. But in order to win this election, they have to get the white, blue-collar fools who were tricked by the Obama machine in 2008. The blue-collar white voter will not see themselves represented very often, if at all. Instead, they will be seeing other parts of the Rainbow Coalition. So if the Democrats are doing this on purpose, it makes no sense. It makes no sense because the minorities are all going to vote for the Democrats to the 90th or the 95th percentile. The voters they need are the hoodwinked white blue-collar voters who were tricked into voting for Obama last time. I do not see them represented here. In fact, I see the opposite here. And since the white blue-collar worker is shafted through affirmative action, through the skewed contracts, which are now going primarily to minorities and women, I have no idea what they're doing here, which leads me to believe maybe they don't know what they're doing. And also, if you add in the fact that Schumer is not there, Cuomo is not there, and some other pretty big, I would have to say, for a Democrat, moderate Democrats, for lack of another phrase, because there really are no moderate Democrats. Today, a Democrat's a socialist. So we say moderate socialists like Schumer, moderate socialists like Cuomo are not there. They're afraid of the radical wing. It's almost like a powwow of all the radicals in the Democrat coalition. I've never seen anything like this. So the American people are seeing a choice here between the Romney-Ryan machine and the Obama, whatever his name is, machine. I don't even know what his name is. Oh, yes, it's Biden. That's correct. Here you have a man as crazy as Harry Reid. Well, you have to listen to this clip again. Talk about, you got to play clip one for them again.
If this flood of outside money continues, the day after the election, 17 angry old white men will wake up and realize they've just bought the country.
Do you believe this is a mark of psychosis? If anybody typifies an angry old white man, would it not be Harry Reid? Is this man, is he having a psychotic break, to use a phrase like that? Or are they out of touch with reality to the extent they don't even know what they sound like anymore? Now, they have trouble with the Jewish vote in the country today, which, incidentally, if you study these things as I do for a living, during the Carter-Reagan fight for the White House, Carter alienated the Jews to such an extent that they lost 40% of the Jewish vote, which was almost unheard of. They lost 40% of the Jewish vote under Jimmy Carter. And now we have the most anti-Israel president since Jimmy Carter. But to make matters even worse, they're not even trying to cover it up. Instead, they're having the anti-Israel Jimmy Carter speaking. So what are they doing here? Who are they appealing to? I don't quite understand it. Then instead of having a war hero general, someone who actually fought in combat or maybe even fired a rifle, even at a target range, they have a fake general, a woman general who got there through suing her way to the top. Under the guise of sexual harassment. So it gets worse by the speaker. I don't understand what they're trying to do. And the fact of the matter is, this is very good for America. The reason this is good for America, because America will be reminded that they have a clear choice in only a few months. A clear choice between the, well, let us say, let me put it another way. I thought about it last night in bed. And what I came up with was this. Which party, Democrat or Republican, do I fear more? Or which party do I fear less? I fear the Democrats more because under Janet Napolitano, they become a fascist dictatorship. Everyone is under suspicion. Everyone is afraid of being arrested. Everyone's running in fear from this woman and this tyrannical Department of Homeland Security. That's number one. So you say, well, will this end under Romney? My feeling is yes, it will. So which party do you fear less, number one? And the other question I ask myself is, which of the two parties do you think will grant us better a better chance at national security? There is no question in my mind, as I have pointed out in my best-selling book, Trickle-Down Tyranny, there's no choice here. Obama has been an unmitigated disaster as an appeaser. He has made us less safe at night. I can give you a litany and a list of what he's done to destroy our national security. I absolutely know that I'd be safer as an American citizen under the Romney-Ryan ticket. I just know it. We'd have our pride back. We'd have our military back. We'd have a feeling that our flag is ours again, that it has not been hijacked by some renegade band from Chicago and some left-wing wackadoodles that they dug up God only knows in which union halls. So let's go back to the primary questions. Which party do you fear more? Which party will give you a better sense of national security? For me, there's no question other than the Republicans. Period, end of story. I fear this government in a way I never feared a government before. I never feared the Bush government. I fear this government under Obama. I fear them in the bottom of my soul. I feel I'm being watched. I feel they're spying on me. I feel they're spying on every American. And I fear that they absolutely distrust anyone who is a patriot. I know that they have a hit list of people that they're looking at. Returning military veterans are not their heroes, but their suspects. Radical Muslims are not their suspects, but the invited guests to their parties. You want me to go down the list? I'll be glad to do so for you. I have no idea why any educated person could ever vote for this man again. I have no idea why they ever voted for him to begin with, other than they were hoodwinked or they hated Bush so much. But on a more fundamental level, he is a liar. He's a liar and he's incompetent. Why do I say that? He came into power as an anti-war candidate, and one of the first acts he committed was sending 30,000 fresh troops to Afghanistan, and was still mired in Afghanistan for reasons nobody understands. Nobody knows why we are in Afghanistan, why we are training those renegades who are shooting our men in the back. I will never understand. Nobody has ever conquered that group of despotic tribesmen. Nobody ever will civilize them and turn them into happy faces selling Happy Meals. What we're doing there, to me, is a product of a runaway train. They have no idea why we're there, yet we're still there. But Obama was supposed to end the war. Did he end the war? No, he lied. Economically, the greatest disaster in American history has been Barack Obama, a man who, as someone in the media said, Obama is just another arrogant Ivy Leaguer, period. I think it was John Cusack. Is he an actor, a communist, a left-wing actor? I think it was John Cusack over the weekend said, is he just another Ivy League AH who does not even know what he is doing, right? Is that what's going on in this country today? He seems to be another out-of-touch Ivy Leaguer. No matter what he does is wrong, because, A, he's never run a lemonade stand. Everything Obama has, he was given. He's never held a job. He has never built a business. He has never created a service that anybody needs. He attacks those who build their own businesses. He wants to tax those who build their own businesses. And he wants to reward those who do nothing for society. The debt has topped $16 trillion. Don't blame Bush. The debt is $16 trillion. It has gone up $4.6 billion since this imposter was put in office by George Soros and the other bad guys on the planet. The fact of the matter is, GM is broke.
Savage.
The horrible news coming out of Libya is on everyone's minds. We're joined now by Senator Jim Inhofe so we can learn his thoughts about what's going on in the Middle East. Senator Inhofe, tell us what you think is going on over there.
You know, this is something that happened. Let's don't forget. And so we're so quick to forget things like the first trip that this president took 4 years ago when he became president. Do you remember where that was to? That was to Egypt. And he spent his time apologizing to them for our conduct in the past. I've had several occasions of being with Netanyahu, and, you know, they shake their heads wondering why in the world we have a president for the first time who's trashing Israel. Now we're faced with a couple of a tragic thing that's happened in Cairo as well as in Benghazi.
You knew Ambassador Stevens?
It happens that I knew Christopher Stevens. Actually, we call him Chris Stevens. He was in my office just a matter of a few weeks ago for his confirmation. Now, let's keep in mind, he was nominated by President Obama, but he was not one of his political guys. This guy had experience. He had been in Tripoli, Jerusalem, Damascus, Cairo, Riyadh, and a lot of other places, so he is well qualified. But when what happened to him reminds me so much of what happened not too long ago, and we all remember what happened in Mogadishu when the naked bodies of our Marines were dragged through the streets. Well, that's exactly what happened to Chris Stevens. His partially naked body was dragged through the streets in this direct affront to United States of America. Then, of course, at the same time, almost concurrently, we had the problem in Cairo. And what was the president's response to in Cairo? He said, and I'm going to read this because I couldn't make this up. You have to read it to believe it.
What did it say?
This was in response to what happened in the U.S. Embassy in Cairo. By our State Department. This is Obama. Quote, the Embassy of the United States in Cairo condemns the continuing efforts by misguided individuals to hurt the religious feelings of Muslims, unquote. Now, here we are again apologizing. I don't know when this is going to stop, but these two events were a direct result of our new attitude that started 4 years ago in the Middle East.
Tell us a little bit about your important book.
You know, one thing that was really missing from the Democrats' convention was any talk of global warming, of cap and trade, except in his speech, Obama couldn't just let it go without some kind of notice, and that's when he talked about the hoax. Well, the hoax, that's my book. You know, the hoax is came in what he talked about was really the a direct relationship with the book that I wrote. And then, of all things to happen, Clint Eastwood at the Republican convention coming out, and this is a quote, he said, "President Obama is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people." Hey, Mike, that actually, that was the subtitle of my book. So at least now we're getting attention. I'll tell you why this is important now. I know that the other things are happening, distracting us from this. But you can be sure that this president has made every effort, if he is getting reelected, to try to impose upon the American people the largest tax increase in history. You might remember, Michael, we've talked about this before. This $300 to $400 billion tax increase would be an annual tax increase on the American people. And you might remember, I know that there are a lot of listeners out there listening to us who think that I've been wrong on this whole, the whole hoax. Let's keep in mind, we specifically ask the director of the Environmental Protection Agency, Lisa Jackson, and live on TV, I said, in the event that you are able to pass some of this legislation on the cap and trade tax, will this reduce CO2? Will it reduce anthropogenic gases? Her answer was no, it wouldn't. Because the problem is not here. The problem is in Egypt, and the problem's in Mexico and China and India. And so you could carry it to its logical conclusion, Michael, that if we were to pass that type of thing here, not only would we get the largest tax increase in the history of America, you would actually end up with an increase in CO2 emissions, because we'd be losing our manufacturing base to places that have no restrictions. So that's why we've got to keep that issue alive. Obviously, it's in my book, The Greatest Hoax. And if anyone would listen to the, just pull up thegreatesthoax.com. The publisher has that website. And in that, you'll see some really fun interviews that I've had with some of the most liberal groups, including Rachel Maddow and several others. So I think we need to keep in mind that should this guy get reelected, he's going to have, well, the crown jewel of all regulations is cap and trade.
How has it been received?
Well, it's been received well because the fact people didn't know. For example, this whole thing started in 1992. That was the Earth Summit down in Rio de Janeiro. And remember, Al Gore went down there and they were going to come back and have the Kyoto Treaty. Obviously, we did not vote to ratify. It wasn't even submitted for ratification. But that's when everybody started introducing bills, recognizing that this is something, or feeling that this is something that was going to become very popular. I can remember, and Michael, you can remember too, back in the old days when the financial backbone of the Democratic Party in terms of supporting races, congressional races, was the labor unions. Then it was the all kinds of other things. In the last 10 years, it's been the far left environmental activists. It's been MoveOn.org and George Soros and Michael Moore, Al Gore, the Hollywood elite. And they're the ones, they don't put in thousands of dollars. They put in millions of dollars in campaigns. Well, you got to keep in mind, they haven't given up. They're still going to want to try to pass the largest tax increase in the history of America. That would be a cap and trade tax increase. And by the way, when you talk about large numbers like $300 to $400 billion, our heads start swirling. We're not real sure what that means to us personally. So what I do, Michael, in my state of Oklahoma, every year I get a list of the number of families who file a federal tax return, and I do the math. What that would mean, a $300 to $400 billion tax increase, would be over $3,000 a family. And even those people who believe that that man-made gases, CO2, are causing catastrophic global warming, even if that's true, then we know that this wouldn't have the effect of reducing emissions. So that's $3,000 for every taxpaying family in my state of Oklahoma. It's a big deal, and we got to keep talking about it.
Well, what are the chances of that happening?
Well, what's happening right now, and you got to keep in mind, this, we got an election less than 2 months away, but how many people know, even Michael, as well informed as you are you aware that this administration, we can identify in the last 4 years, $68.4 billion going toward global warming issues and the green agenda. So he's doing it right now, and he's doing it with through the bureaucracy. And so it's happening today, but if by some reason he should be reelected, I can assure you that would be his number one goal. And there are a lot of things that he hasn't done that he has whispered and said, look, don't worry, we'll take care of that, but I've got to get reelected first. Remember his conversation with Medvedev when the mic was on, and he didn't know it. And he talked about, just help me get reelected, then we'll go even further. That's my concern.
Where can we read more?
Here's what I'd like to do. You can get the book, The Greatest Hoax, and you can get it off any of the sources you normally get, but at least go to the website that the publisher has, thegreatesthoax.com, and in this you'll find out some of the information, how far we go. Again, the most interesting and the longest chapter is the United Nations, how this whole thing started in 1992 and what the real motive was. And this was before ClimateGate, before their science was totally rejected. But they're not going to give up, and they're going to be back. So go to the website, look at it, and you'll be well informed.
Senator Jim Inhofe, thanks again for being with us on the Savage Nation during this important time.
Okay, thanks so much.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
No inside information. I'm an ordinary citizen who studies this for a living. But if I see, if I could read the tea leaves, I will tell you there is a disaster waiting for the Democrats. Schumer's not there. Cuomo's not there. The polls are fraudulent. And the fact of the matter is, a poll just came out from the Washington Post, ABC, two fraud operators. ABC, always Bolshevik crud. Washington Post, always owned by the Democrats. And even they, even the ABC Wash Post gang, is saying this. Barack Obama approaches his nomination for a second term with the lowest pre-convention personal popularity of an incumbent president in ABC News Wash Post polls since the 1980s. He's also at his lowest of the year among registered voters, with trouble among women. Could you believe this? Are you telling me that the women finally woke up to this fraudster? I don't believe it. I thought that he hoodwinked them. He's like the husband that a lot of them wanted to cheat with, I guess. They were in love with him the first time. I guess he's been seen as an unreliable lover, psychologically, that is. Obama's popularity dips underwater. For Romney, a faint favorability bounce. Yeah, well, I can see the faint favorability with the worst convention in American history. The only two parts of it that were good were Clint Eastwood and the guy who followed him. So anyway, there it is. Something's wrong with the picture. Because if even the left-wing posters at ABC and Wash Post are showing Obama collapsing amongst women, something is wrong with this picture. The Democrats seem to be doubling down on their negatives. They are known as the minority party, and they're entitled to be the minority party. One speaker after another is alienating the American people. I've never seen anything quite like this. I know that both parties are out of touch with reality. Incidentally, you're listening to The Savage Nation. I had choice comments about the Republicans, saved only by Clint Eastwood, and then, of course, by Romney himself. This group of left-wing extremists is shocking to me. Why they would ever choose to have on that platform Barbara Lee, a member of the House of Representatives of California, who was a former volunteer at the Oakland chapter of the Black Panther Party, and a known socialist. I don't understand. Well, I do understand. They're signaling that they're good members of the International Socialist Union. They then had Lieutenant General, so-called, Claudia Kennedy, the first woman to reach the rank of three-star general. She did so strictly by suing her way to the top. I don't know if you remember who that General Kennedy was. No military experience in the field. She was a sexual harassment claimer. She destroyed fellow officer General Larry Smith and moved away to the top with fake claims of sexual harassment. That's who they chose to put up there. All I can say is that we all know the famous phrase from Muhammad Ali's day of rope-a-dopa. Remember rope-a-dopa? It seems to me that we've gone from rope-a-dopa to hope-a-dopa in one generation, because only dopa would believe in the hopa of Obama. If you care to comment, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. By what I can read, what I can feel, if the election were held tomorrow, the Republicans would win by 8 to 9 points. I believe the polls are all faulty for two reasons. One, they're all skewed towards the Democrats. Two, conservatives don't generally answer the telephone. They're working. Just as I said, you can define Romney supporters and Obama supporters this way. Romney supporters sign the check on the front. Obama supporters sign the check on the back. Who is at home to take a call from a pollster other than people who sign the checks on the back? So therefore, the polls are all distorted. They're all wrong. They're fake. I've never been polled in my life. I don't know anyone who's ever been polled in their life. I don't know anyone who is a conservative who's ever been polled in their life. And I don't think any conservatives would ever be polled in their life. And so as I say, if the election were held today, I believe that Romney Ryan would win by 8 to 9 points if it were held tomorrow. 1-800-449-8255 is my phone number. My website's michaelsavage.com. If you care to comment, I think that you're crazier than I believe people could be, because truthfully, it is a circus out there. We got Jimmy Carter, who bungled the Iran hostage crisis, gave away the Panama Canal, lauded Fidel Castro, the murderous dictator in Cuba, written numerous anti-Semitic books and screeds. We've got other wonderful prizes for you on the Savage Nation today. Today is a day on radio that for a guy like me who's been doing it for 18 years, it's sort of like going into an exam and you know all the answers before you even went into the exam room. I mean, I know all the answers here. If the Democrats wanted to pick more unattractive, more anti-American people, they couldn't have done so. Which leads me to ask myself a question. How out of touch can the Democrats be that they would choose known socialists, known anti-Americans, known haters, union thugs, Jew haters to be their lead speakers? How is this possible? I don't understand it. Is that because there's no longer a moderate Democrat in the House of Representatives or in the Senate? I've never seen anything like this. The phone number, again, you know, I don't have to repeat myself. It's boring, frankly. Thank God we don't have to wait too long until Obama is back in Chicago working for Rahm Emanuel as a community organizer. Because I can tell you, they do not represent America. They represent a very small swath of the minority groups in America. And I say that pointedly because I don't even think they represent the mainstream of the minority groups. I believe they represent a small swath of the minorities groups that they belong to, right? If you want to comment, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Pittsburgh, PA. Kevin, welcome. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
I've been polled. I got polled by Quinnipiac, and I had another poll. I can't remember the name of it, but I'm a conservative, and I lied on both of them. I told them I'd vote for Obama. Just, I don't know, mess with their heads. I think.
Wait, you mean, so they may actually think Obama's more popular than he is?
Well, I think it's skewed, and I think...
How do you feel about Governor Bev Perdue speaking, a woman who was so enmeshed in scandal and had the nerve in September to call for the suspension of elections? Can you believe they picked somebody as wackadoodle as her?
Yeah.
Well, I can't. That leads me to ask a question. In September of 2011, this freak said this, and I'm quoting, "I think we ought to suspend, perhaps, elections for Congress for 2 years... and just tell them we won't hold it against them, whatever decisions they make, to just let them help this country recover." This very same corrupt governor revealed in October 2010 that her 08 campaign was under state and federal investigation. They looked into 41 confirmed private flights Perdue took dating back to 05, which her campaign did not report until 09. The woman is a walking disaster. She is a poster girl for the corruption and self-righteousness that is pervasive in the Democrat Party of today. And let me tell you something else. I, Michael Savage, grew up in a Democrat family. I grew up as an immigrant son. So don't think I'm just anti-Democrat. The Democrat Party of today would not have RFK in it. They wouldn't have JFK in it. They would consider JFK a right-winger. He would be considered a suspicious character by the Department of Homeland Security because he would be a returning war veteran. Remember, he was a hero of World War II, which means he'd be given a special screen by Big Sis Napolitano. And he would not be a member of the Democrat Party. The only leadership that you see in this party are those who give out corrupt grants and contracts to their fellow supporters is what it comes down to. It's unbelievable to me. I expected them to try to reach out to the mainstream. I expected them to try to get some mainstream Democrat speakers. I expected them not to showcase the worst of America. And I am telling you that this tells me that they're so out of touch with reality that they're going to lose the election. I was never this positive about it until today. And I'll stake a claim right now. Unless there's a war or they rig the election completely with illegal alien voters, which is highly likely, or they use the computer data analysis firm in Spain, which they're using to give us fake results altogether. If the real vote were held today, the Democrats would lose by 8 to 9 points by what I see. I've never seen anything like this.
Savage.